Hello, and welcome to Learning College. My name is Alex Linder, and you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com. Today, we got something new, and what we have is an exciting new book from our own Mike Smith, who leaves perfectly lettered comments at Kirksville Today now and again. He has come out with a novel called The Eradicator, published in 2024, and we're going to do it. And I asked him, he said he didn't mind if I commented while reading it, so I might drop in a few comments. He has published it in standard trade format, it looks like to me, and he's also got it free and available to read on his new Substack. You can find links at Kirksville Today or just look it up. But again, The Eradicator by Mike Smith, 2024, available for sale, or you can read it. And it has 24 chapters, 190 pages. We're going to do 12 sessions of two chapters apiece and see what's going on with it. And turning to it, I notice he says, "Thank you, Alex Linder," is on the title page. So I appreciate that. Maybe I've given him a little idea or two, or something we've done at Kirksville Today has inspired him. Who knows? Who knows? It's his book. Let's see. Now there's 190 pages, three parts. We're going to do chapter one and two. It's not all that long, maybe half hour plus. Let's see what's going on. Part one, again, The Eradicator by Mike Smith. I got the paperback in my hands, which he was gracious enough to send me. And on the front page, you've got the title, the name, and you've got a picture of a bunch of test tubes, most of them filled with clear liquid and one filled with a sort of a purple or magenta looking liquid. Interesting. Chapter 1, The Eradicator, Mike Smith. Chapter 1, A Good First Step. It began with the unprecedented increase in the population of the great apes. Bonobos, chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans. Most European governments fostered this increase, as did the North American Save the Apes Project and many nominally private breeding programs, like NGOs. The number of gorillas climbed tenfold from 250,000 to 2,500,000. The number of orangutans 20-fold to 1,400,000, and chimpanzees and bonobos leaped from 150,000 to 2 million. What to do with these burgeoning beasts was clear, according to Ezra Weiss of the Zoo Project, namely, free the ones in cages. Morality demands the release of all sentient beings from imprisonment of any kind, agreed the project's Rosa Schwartz. Next, the great apes were included in what ethics experts called the moral community. That meant establishing the legal equality of human beings and their closest genetic kin, great apes. North American Save the Apes Project. Great apes. Some Peter Singer tier bullshit justifying it. Next, the great apes were included in what ethics experts called the moral community. That meant establishing the legal equality of human beings and their closest genetic kin, great apes. Mainstreaming great apes meant not only outlawing scientific experimentation on them, but ordering schools, municipalities, courts, and employers to accommodate them. Great apes went to school, elementary school first. Because their populations were still comparatively small, this change appeared insignificant. Human children caused problems anyway. One second grader managed to have his arm ripped off by an orangutan seated near him, which not only inconvenienced school staff, but led to a media probe. The resulting news story, titled School of Hatred, led to a teacher's dismissal and the school's embrace of Love More. Love More was a training program, like ADL's A World of Difference, a training program fostering sensitivity to the educational needs of great ape students. Great apes didn't have to do homework or take tests, but courts did mandate that all students learn at least one, quote, one competency. So 16 years and I got to be good at some one thing. Teachers spent much classroom time on things like showing bonobos how to add and subtract. although the one competency target remained out of reach. Getting a bonobo to hold a piece of chalk correctly was considered satisfactory for the time being. And honestly, I must admit to an educational deficit myself. Bonobo or bonobo, I don't know. I will look it up before the second session. But you get the point, I feel. Far from neglecting human students, schools drafted them to assist with the mainstreaming. Boys and girls helped the handlers of great ape students spoon-feed their charges and take them outdoors to poop and pee. Good parents and students ignored danger. Squeamishness on anyone's part was deemed uncooperativeness, meaning proof of hatred if you didn't go along. And, quote, hatred as consequences, said Sherry Berman, sub-regional director of the Global Justice Initiative for Education. Global Justice Initiative for Education, mainstreaming great apes. Municipalities accepted great apes as secretarial appointees in mayoral offices and on city commissioners' teams. Their handlers did the work. Bring your human to work day, joked public employees, before learning that such jokes were firing offenses, disqualifying them from collecting their pensions. Quote, we absolutely must, explained Ira Rosenthal, executive president of the Global Commission on Equity in Civil Services, fight fascism at every step. So sticking literal apes, not just retards or niggers, into white classrooms to retard their learning and make it impossible, and to the extent they pick up anything, it's attitude adjustment. You can see where he's going with all this. Or you can see what comes from and inspires all this. No police officers knew how to communicate with a gorilla, not really, so courts ordered police departments to train officers in great ape signing, a sign language GAS for short, great ape signing, GAS. To meet a rapid upswing in criminal cases involving great apes, courts ordered public defenders to take a course of GAS too. Free Enterprise quickly created jobs in GAS instruction and produced many thousands of GAS-speaking attorneys, the diversity industry. The criminal charges included property destruction, petty larceny, public indecency, murder, and loitering. Before she got tired, one orangutan even broke two plate glass windows in a metropolitan business district. 10 police officers, helped by a former zookeeper, took about as many hours to bring her into custody. Later, the state prosecutor indicted the former zookeeper for assault because he recommended using a tranquilizer dart. Great ape suspects appeared in court accompanied by their handlers. Institutes, centers, and committees long ago suppressed the prejudice that bonobos, chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans have no human peers. Soon great apes and their handlers filled jury boxes as well. Great apes voted in elections. Their handlers, called advocates, cast the votes in their stead. Advocates, media explained, are helping the historically most wrong populations find their voices at last. The marginalized, the great apes. Specific benefits accompanied the inclusion of great apes in workplaces. Non-hateful corporations got tax subsidies. Non-hateful managers got promotions. Especially, non-hateful employees could hope for positive worldwide fame. Before mandating workplace inclusion, national legislatures had taken care to pass, quote, personal responsibility laws. These forbade paying workers' compensation to anyone injured by a great ape. They were challenged only once by the family of a U.S. man killed by a gorilla co-worker. The Supreme Court refused to hear the case. The benefits of including great apes in the workplace didn't include higher productivity. Forecasters expected productivity numbers to show major gains, though, and soon. Many experts were working on a better method of calculating productivity. In the meantime, all goods crashed in quantity and quality. Panic spread in the markets for few traders had shorted. Why, after all, bet against love and equality? Nonetheless, few companies could meet their deliveries and stay in business. The problem was that great apes and their handlers weren't properly trained to build, repair, or keep track of anything. The neglect of accounting training for chimpanzees was blamed especially. The handlers of the great apes weren't able to do every job equally well, and looking after their charges was a full-time responsibility. So screw threads came out misshapen when they came out at all. Computers out of the box were empty. In many cities, apartment buildings burned to the ground because of electrical shorts and recently renovated wiring. Conscientious business people didn't ship subpar aeronautical equipment or defective medical devices, but the supply of conscientious and legitimate businesses was shrinking. The great ape population grew, partly from the breeding programs, which continued, but mostly naturally. Ape begat ape. Their number became a significant percentage of the moral community. That's chapter one. Chapter two, we're on page 6, going to page 14. Chapter two, the inner ape. Chapter one was a good first step. Chapter two, the inner ape. So they've created ape civil rights, ape mainstreaming, ape special privileges. And after all that comes the drop in standards and the you better not talk about it part. Chapter two, the inner ape, the inner ape. Jake McAllister stared at his face in his bathroom mirror and wondered if he ought to shave. Mind you, James Joyce, right? The big thick book. He probably needed to look presentable for the banquet tonight. They were renaming the lab after him, changing Corin Science Works to McAllister Science Works at 9 o'clock. Correns to McAllister. Jake, J-A-K-E, McAllister, capital M, capital A. Renaming it in Jeff's honor, or Jake's honor, to McAllister Science Works at 9 o'clock. He stood on the heated marble tiles of the bathroom and smeared shaving lotion on his face absentmindedly while the television boomed in the media room. He dreaded the dinner. Geneticists' award dinner, they called it, unimaginatively, in his opinion. Did he have the qualifications to judge their lack of imagination? Yes. In his work, he made successful jumps of imagination leading 2 years ago to his career breakthrough, the discovery of the most important genetic similarity between chimpanzees and humans. And, quote, imagination is more important than knowledge, unquote, as Einstein said. But Jake disliked that quote because it seemed to imply that imagination is unconnected to knowledge. His own scientific achievement exemplified the truth that knowledge is the basis of imagination. Not that he patted himself on the back, nor did he mean to compare himself to the great Einstein. No, a white boy from a background of poverty had no right to feel proud. That would be ignoble. And he had aspired to nobility his whole life, or since middle school at least. So Jake McAllister aspires to nobility. He wondered why he didn't feel like shaving. Maybe, he thought, smiling a little, it's because man and apes had a common evolutionary ancestor, and my ape nature is asserting itself. He looked more closely in the mirror. Do I look like an ape? He asked himself. The jawline? The brow? No. And the ears are too square. Was he a modified brachiator? In other words, could he swing from trees? He wasn't sure, since he had never participated in athletics. He thought, swinging from branches efficiently would require a shorter spine and bigger shoulders, and mine are homo, capital H, though not in a gay way. He immediately felt ashamed of making that bigoted quip in his mind. He thought, that was my inner ape coming out, or maybe my bad background. He didn't think about his background often. He hadn't been abused. His parents just hadn't had as much money as most other people in Chatsworth, Georgia. He had tried fighting his way out of Chatsworth by working swing shift in a Ganges Shipment Delight Center. and saving money for college. But saving enough took decades normally, so he got student loans. His debt was still large 10 years into his career as a geneticist. Jobs in the profession were few, and like all private sector work, genetics employment could be patchy for all but the smartest. He sat at a common bench and executed gene expression experiments for startup companies. Gene expression experiments. The biggest difference between his first scientific job and his current one was that now he designed the experiments that he executed. They came from his own imagination, his own knowledge. He shaved and get it over with strokes. He thought about why he went into science in the first place. Fundraising bored him, so he left that to others. But gene research especially fascinated him because of its exactitude. He liked the exactness of gene research. It required painstaking patience, or Sitzfleisch in German, as Otto Hensler, his old German professor, called it. Sitzfleisch, seated, Sitzfleisch, the ability to sit and perform experiments for years and maybe get nowhere. But if you were good, then occasionally you could unearth some fact, maybe only a corroboration of some other fact, and add that particle to the mountain of humanity's knowledge, like an ant carrying a pebble to a pyramid in the grass. But his breakthrough discovery was no pebble. It was more like a boulder. No one had suspected the most important genetic similarity between chimpanzees and humans, yet he identified it and proved it in the lab. His paper, which listed his name after those of his ad hoc team, was a revelation among those who know the cognoscenti of geneticists. Though he never gave interviews or agreed to be photographed, he was a bona fide celebrity. He used a damp towel to wipe the shaving lotion off his face. He thought he had every reason to feel pleased, not only with his getting an award tonight, but with his team's getting one too. He threw on his shirt. The TV kept booming. He felt suddenly ill at ease. He had these attacks occasionally, out of the blue. He thought, I know why I feel this way. It's because of the thing that bothers me sometimes, the thing that makes my discovery seem dirty. No, dirty is too strong a word. Ignoble is an exact word. He hated the misrepresentation of his work to serve political ends. That's what got him. He had even seen journalists promoting the mainstreaming of great apes by quoting lines from his paper. They misunderstand everything, he thought. For example, not all haplotypes are dispositive or... He halted that thought and shook his head, dispelling his uneasy feeling by a deliberate effort. Very notes of Orwell there. Stop think, or whatever Orwell called it. Media never got science right, nor did policymakers and the public. People just weren't exact, and there was nothing he could do about that. He stopped tying his tie and faced another dispiriting truth. Why really did the owners of the lab decide to name it after him? What was back of tonight's honor? It was money, only money. The lab had boomed with so valuable a scientist as he in its folds. All kinds of people, even a casino owner, had made large donations to it this year. So my role tonight, he thought, is not only to dance around the golden calf in celebration, but maybe wear a costume and play the role of the golden calf myself. He had a new thought. Don't go. But he halted that thought, too. He approached the TV as he finished tying his tie. The TV, a wall screen, showed a gorilla screeching directly at the camera. On this screen, the gorilla's head looked almost as big as King Kong's. The camera must have hovered only millimeters away from his face because it included every alien fold of the mouth, every drop of moisture on the nostril rims, every dripping hair. The gorilla screeched again, the sound amplified now, and the blood dripped from its teeth. Jake wondered, why are they making it seem like a monster? Then a single word, love, was superimposed on it and the voice of an adenoidal teenaged girl said, "This is a soul. You should love all fucking souls. Love. This is a soul. You should love all fucking souls. Love." Jake shook his head and wondered when the government's responsible media agency, capital RMA, responsible media agency, started permitting the F word to be spoken in public service announcements. He changed the channel. A news show was on. A snapshot of a blue-eyed blonde popped on the screen. She was young but reserved in appearance, almost icy. He somehow recognized her name when the announcer said it. Police arrested Greta Andrakova Tuesday, charged her with public intoxication the second time this year. The star of the recent movie Liberation faces lots of legal trouble since her breakout debut, including an assault charge, plus a $1,000 fine for getting naked in Casa Dolce, a children's restaurant in Fresno. We reached out to the producers of her movie in progress, You Like to Stick It, but they refused to comment. Again, Greta Ondrakova, let's say. I think the Slavic have an accent in the second to last syllable. Or the third to last. Ondrakova. Ondrakova. Jake turned off the TV. He thought, that's what most people prize, a dumb drunk. She's probably a drug abuser as well. He put his Oxfords on. It annoyed him that he was still thinking about that actress. Although we tried not to judge people by their looks, her eyes, the set of her mouth, or her whole stance toward the world as shown in her posture and features, kindled in him a desire to help her. He didn't feel attracted to her. He just felt that she didn't deserve whatever was hurting her. Thinking of that prompted him to wonder if he was happy. He rarely thought of Janet, his ex-wife, but now he considered whether their marriage would have succeeded had he put more effort into it. Was science everything he wanted? Wasn't holy matrimony the healthy state to be in, after all? But what was holy? What was noble? He looked for his jacket, but couldn't find it. No, he thought, our marriage didn't satisfy us. Without children, the whole thing had felt pointless, like two adults playing house. It isn't true, he thought with sudden vehemence. It isn't true that life is pointless. My work is noble, and that's enough. He reviewed his lifelong notions about nobility. Science was noble. Fighting superstition and ignorance with reason and knowledge, that was noble. He was a soldier in the war for progress. He found his coat and drove to the dinner. Paragraph break. Chad Bingham floored the Maserati up the ramp in the parking garage, knifed it between a Benz and a Porsche, and removed the key. Not a scratch. Not even the possibility of a scratch. That was because Chad was the best damn valet parking attendant that Hempstead Parkers ever LLC ever had. His natural strut took him to the garage elevator. Losing his left leg and right arm in the Iran War hadn't harmed his spirit. He used prosthetic limbs like a pro, getting cautious with them only when he remembering how expensive they were. "They cost an arm and a leg," he joked to anyone who asked. When the elevator door banged open on the ground floor, he strutted into the street again. A hive of activity centered on the entrance of the IF From Convention Center of Hempstead, H-E-M-P-S-T-A-N, From, like the David From, the Jew from Canada. Waiting vehicles lined the block. His fellow attendants were bouncing into them and driving off as fast as they could without squealing the tires on the blacktop or colliding. Two things their boss, Jimmy Wan, J-U-A-N, prohibited, though there were frequent close calls. Reminds me of Ferris Bueller. They all zoomed into the parking garage. Excuse me. Chad liked the job. The way it worked, an attendant got a flat fee of $200 if on duty for longer than 4 hours, 100 if less, plus half the tips. All attendants were independent contractors and paid their own taxes and health insurance, if any. To get hired, they took drug, driving, medical, and criminal background tests. At least that's the way it worked on paper. In reality, they just handed $500 to Jimmy Wan, put that in his hand. An attendant drove too close for Chad's good foot. Chad grabbed the driver's sideway mirror. Dude, are you blind? You're going to cripple somebody. Sorry, Chad, the attendant said. Slow down, Chad told him, letting go of the mirror. The attendant drove on more slowly. Yo, Chad, we got this. That lopo's the last. Ain't gonna be no more, Jimmy Wan said, walking up to him. The lopo, L-O-P-O, meant an old pickup truck, lopo. They park pickups mostly on janky gigs, unlike exceptional events, as Jimmy Wan liked to call gigs like tonight's. Exceptional event. Okay, TL, Chad nodded. He followed Jimmy Wan back over to the garage where Jimmy Wan lit a joint. Why you always call me TL? Jimmy Wan wanted to know, nursing the first drag with both hands. Stands for team leader in the war. I don't know why you always got to be calling me that, though. Force of habit. Jimmy Wan left the garage after two puffs. Chad was 6 feet two, had a shock of sandy hair confined to the top of his head, a slit mouth, a long diagonal scar on his left cheek, which in a different country or different century would be the mark of a sword duel, and cracked corneas that looked like used glass marbles, like a Brudershoff German dueling scar of the German fraternities. He didn't have the appearance of a deep thinker, but often thought hard, and now thought about how lucky he was to have this job. Demand for workers with his physical challenges, remember he's missing an arm and a leg, wasn't high. He thought that Jimmy Wan had hired him for his positive attitude. Jimmy Wan hadn't said that exactly, but had told him, quote, it wasn't because I felt sorry for you. The job and his injured veterans checks paid his bills, including the rent for his studio apartment. This job was basic compared to what he did in the war. He had been a combat engineer, assigned to route clearance, finding and removing IEDs. The Zagros Mountains was a tough theater. One mishap turned him into a casualty. No, he thought, I got no reason to bitch about this job. Something was bugging him anyway, and it came to view just now. A van drove up, and Jimmy Wan, waiting for this as much as for the night's wrap-up, ran over to it. After talking to the driver through her open window, he slid open the side door and helped two strange figures climb out. A tall, pompadoured man and a short, bulky gorilla. 2 weeks ago, Hempstan Parkers, LLC, had announced to employees that its compliance with the workplace inclusion laws would begin soon. No one had said anything about it. Chad didn't even believe it could be real. He respected orders, but regarded that announcement as bullshit. Yet a gorilla and a handler were here now. He grimaced. How could a gorilla park a car? Or drive one? He guessed that they would only display the gorilla back in the office, making a space for a cage. Like a damn zoo, he thought. Then he felt ashamed of himself for having a negative attitude. He looked at the billboard across the street. It was lit up now, and it reassured him, because it showed the face of Greta Ondrakova. The photographer had caught her laughing and throwing her hair back. Her hair extended past the billboard's edge in a horizontal line, a great publicity still. Chad had seen her in the one and only movie she had made so far, Liberation. She played a woman who dumped her boyfriend and had adventures in Italy. Chick bullshit, in Chad's opinion, except that she filled the screen with energy and laziness at the same time. She was something real and dreamlike at the same time. He found her appeal hard to say in words. Although she seemed as far above him as royalty above a peasant, he almost felt when looking at the billboard that he could reach out and touch her, and her foreign accent didn't harm her attractiveness. He didn't ask himself why such a woman appeared in a bullshit sex comedy, nor did he think about her personal life and the trouble professional gossip said she had after making that movie. He knew life is struggle. Still, he wondered how she coped with whatever her struggle was. He felt he had things he could teach her. If I get my broken ass hitched someday, he thought, it's going to be to somebody like her. Except that he had never met anybody like her. Hell, he had never even met her. Chad, help out Tobias here. Do whatever he needs, cool? Jimmy Wan said. Chad looked at him blankly. Jimmy Wan had walked up just now with a gorilla and Tobias, its handler. Jimmy Wan repeated, they need some help, cool? Although hooked safely to a leash contraption, the gorilla kept resisting Tobias's touch and seemed disobedient, and Jimmy Wan kept his distance. Was the team leader a coward? Chad said, you want me to teach a monkey how to drive a car? What's your problem? Jimmy Wan responded, frowning. Tobias declared, Shanika is not a monkey, and said to Jimmy Wan, I didn't know your employees were ignorant. What would I be ignorant of, sir? Chad asked him. Will you tell this one, Tobias said to Jimmy Wan, pointing at Chad, that she's a gorilla, a member of the great ape peoples? Jimmy Wan said loudly, I apologize, Tobias. I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry. He's just white trash. He whirled back to Chad. Apologize to our new partner. New partner? He's coming into the business. He's money. He's partner now, same as me. I'm not teaching a monkey how to park cars. Chad thought that his tone of voice didn't sound positive, but for some reason he could not adjust it. Tobias was already ushering Shanika and himself away, afraid of her becoming excited. Meanwhile, Jimmy Wan stepped in Chad's space, and Chad used his good hand to keep him from coming closer. Jimmy Wan swatted his hand away and sounded more Hispanic than Chad had ever heard him sound before. You afraid? You afraid the ape is going to do a better job than you? It's not a good idea to have monkeys parking our clients' vehicles. Why are you so hot on giving my job to that rude jerk Tobias anyway? Because he would be doing all the work, the monkey wouldn't. Jimmy Wan didn't dispute that he intended to replace his drivers with great ape handlers. Both he and Chad knew that's what they were talking about. Chad added, and I don't appreciate your calling me white trash. Chad said, and I don't appreciate your calling me white trash. It's a hell of a way to thank me for my service. Jimmy Wan chuckled, real army soldier, you so straight, so straight. I do a good job for you, TL. I know it. I always have a positive attitude. That's why you hired me. Bringing in monkeys, you know, it's just not right, though. Jimmy Wan spat and shuffled his feet as if doing a dance step. Look, you got to understand something, man. I hired you because I had to, okay? I needed a disabled person. That's the law. Now I got to hire apes for the same reason, so you can't complain. That's why you hired me? Because of... Chad was thunderstruck. Yeah, you know better than an ape. White trash, Jimmy Wan said. Chad didn't respond. He only exhaled slowly to make sure that he wouldn't hit the TL. Then walked away. Jimmy Wan called after him. You fired, get out! Though it was unnecessary. Then Chad heard him yelling in the lengthening distance, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you! And falling all over himself, laughing. And that's the end of chapter one and chapter two there. Our first session, I'm going to call them sessions. And there's 24 chapters, 190-page book. Very interesting setup. So we have a guy going to receive an award who's a white scientist who focuses on nobility, and he's an able geneticist. Then we have a second white guy who's been injured by an IED in Iran who gets fired as a parking lot attendant, living off his veterans checks. So I'm feeling a little Turner Diary meets Orwell. I'm feeling a little bit of Mencken. That remark about adding his moat to human achievement, if he could come up with something in the lab, the Sitzfleisch. Very interesting and all perfectly spelled, perfectly edited. Again, The Eradicator. The Eradicator by Mike Smith. He's got a Substack. Look it up. And everything that we do and record is part of the Learning College. Maybe this is more of like an entertainment. But since it's political, you know, there's always lessons in everything. Always permanently archived at vnnforum.com. So thank you for being with me today, and I'll be back with you again for more from The Eradicator by Mike Smith real soon.